Oh, you know, it was sad because, you know as none of the participants do what's going to happen next. And that interview was conducted only hours before he was shot. And to hear him talk as he did in that interview, really as optimistically as he had at any point in his life about what was coming next and how he was looking forward to getting back on the road and how he and Yoko Ono saw great hope for themselves and the world in the 1980s. That all of that was shadowed by what you knew came next.
Right. Well, the album that came out with that, Double Fantasy, kind of even echoed that sort of in a subcontext after his passing, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of passing, you mentioned how you did the book with Leonard Cohen. He recently passed away. Can you tell us a little bit about that book, just interest for people who have suddenly maybe rediscovered Leonard?
Yeah, and from my experience when I did that book, I suspect there are a lot of people who have yet to discover Leonard Cohen for the first time, and they're in for quite a thing. He was not a prolific writer. He did only about 14 albums, studio albums, in the course of his career, and three of them came in the last few years. It took him quite a long time to write songs, but boy, he wrote them carefully and beautifully, and he produced some classic material like Suzanne and Bird on a Wire, and of course Hallelujah, that people will be listening to for a long, long time. That's a fat book. It's over 600 pages. It covers about 50 years of his life. And he also went through just as dramatic changes as John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen, for that matter, the subject of my other book to date. In the early part of the book, he's very intellectual and poetic, and then later on he opens up very candidly about his failure with relationships and his struggles with clinical depression and need for antidepressants, and it's quite a story.
Jeff, you mentioned his work with Phil Spector. I still remember working at my college radio station, and when records would come in, it would be like Christmas. Here's a new one. We open this thing up, and there it is, Leonard Cohen, produced by Phil Spector. And we look at each other and say, how can this be? How did that come together?
He knew Spector. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think there may be something about it in my book, who proposed the project. I honestly can't remember off the top of my head who proposed it, but I had the same reaction as you did. It seemed like a very unlikely pairing. I mean, Leonard Cohen was the thoughtful poet doing songs, as I said, like Bird on a Wire, and Phil Spector was doing the Ronettes and the Crystals and Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans. It sounded like they didn't belong together, and in fact, they didn't. It was not his best album.
The book that you have out now, Lennon on Lennon: Conversations with John Lennon. What is it about musicians that draw you to wanting to know what they have to say? What is beyond their music? A lot of times we just listen to their music. We know the songs, the lyrics. What was it about it that makes you want to put books together to find out about these individuals in such a way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wish I could say this book series was my idea. It was not. It Chicago Review Press came up with the idea, and they had done a couple of them, including one on Tom Waits that includes an interview of mine, which is how I ended up connecting with them and joining the series. But I think you have an intimate connection with a musician when you love his or her music, and you listen to somebody's music for years. I think it's natural to want to know how the personality aligns with what you're hearing in the songs. And I've never been interested in the aura of the star. At this point, I've met many, many famous people, and the thrill is gone. I've never met actually any of these people. I interviewed Springsteen over the phone, and I don't particularly have a desire to, but I do have a desire to explore what's in their minds, and and how that translated into the wonderful music that they've made.
Well, you may not have met them, but you do share that with the audience through these books. We get to sort of an intimate look. These are their words. It's not taken out of context in this sense. It's just not a quote. It's not a recollection of something. These are actual sort of, I guess we'd call them transcripts, really, from these interviews then.
Yeah, and in a way, it's the purest way to, you know, Lennon, of course, is never going to do an autobiography, and neither is Cohen, although Springsteen just did a great one. But even if there were an autobiography or a biography, this is the, you know, straight from the horse's mouth. This is a different perspective.
Did you come away with anything, even when you're discovering this, going, wow, I can't believe he said that, or that's quite unique, or something that really stands out that we haven't covered through the many dozens, triple, you know, deck of coverage of the Beatles and the books and all the material written about them?
Well, I'm old enough that I, you know, was following the Beatles' career from the beginning in great detail, and I was a big music fan from the time I was about 8 years old, so I knew a lot of this stuff. Some of it I'd forgotten, and it came back to me. Like I'd forgotten that they held press conferences with bags over their heads and had a thing called bagism, where they thought you could eliminate all prejudice by wearing a bag over your head. A little crazy today, but and then there were statements that I hadn't heard before that were some ridiculous statements that I was surprised by. I mean, that Lennon suggested that the Beatles never made much money, which I still find hard to believe, but he said it. He also was going on and on about his penchant for health foods and was then asked, well, how do you reconcile your cigarette smoking? And he said, I have the quote in front of me, he said, smoking doesn't harm you as much as all the chemical crap you eat every morning. I think in the old days, the government used to keep you down by not educating you. Now they keep you down by poisoning you. So he was wrapped up in some, you know, 60s ideas that weren't all. I mean, some of his ideas were great, and he was way ahead of his time on the women's movement and a lot of other issues, but he got a little silly at times, too.
When you take a transcript from something that's spoken, or you see a visual, so there's a facial expression regarding Lennon's, you know, all of his wit on there, does it translate well into the book on those occasions, or are there some lines you have to read a couple times to hit the right rhythm for the humor that's in there?
Yeah, that's part of the, that's a good question. That's part of the editor's job, is you have to know when to, first of all, insert italics or insert in brackets Lennon smiles or audience laughs or something like that. And then there are times when you have to listen to the tape 20 times to try to figure out what exactly is being said, because the tape quality may not be very good. Or you have to put in brackets an explanation of who, you know, John Doe is, somebody who's being referred to briefly. You have to ID them. So there is a lot you have to do to make the translation from audio or video to print.